It's Sunday, the 29th of November, 2015. Happy birthday to Julius Randle. And welcome to the Red Rock Fantasy Basketball Monster Podcast, brought to you by Moneyball.com.au and Smash Elmo. My name is Josh Lloyd, and if you want to be like Smash Elmo and be a sponsor of the podcast for a day, all you guys need to do is leave a review on iTunes. And if you do that, you're a sponsor. It's as straightforward as that. Also, big thanks to Moneyball.com.au, obviously, as our sponsor. If you're in Australia or New Zealand, get involved with Moneyball. They're our only daily fantasy sports site at this point, and they're doing a great job, and there's a lot of money to be won over there and a lot of fun to be had as well. So make sure you're joining in there. All right. It was Saturday's games. We've got Sunday's games to look forward to. Let's not waste any time.
Let's get to it.
The monstrous line of the night goes to Anthony Davis after rumors of his demise were spreading like wildfire on Friday night, after apparently Chris Paul took him out with what appeared to be, by a lot of Twitter reaction, a chainsaw to his knee. Davis was able to play. He played 44 minutes. He had 36 points with 11 rebounds, 2 steals, 3 blocks, elite percentages, 12 of 18 and then 12 of 15 from the line. He was back at his best and had... After that injury, yes, and yes, I know there's a lot of issues with Anthony Davis and injuries and concerns and fragility and injury proneness and all that sort of stuff. But a lot of people, there was a trade offer that came through that someone tweeted at me, and I don't remember exactly who it was, but they were saying, oh, if I give Anthony Davis and Otto Porter for Kawhi Leonard, is that a good deal? No, Anthony Davis is still... You know, the second best player in fantasy, maybe third best. He's right up there. And Kawhi's been great. And Kawhi's been, you know, close to a top five guy this year. But Anthony Davis versus Kawhi, Davis is still the better guy. And yes, you're going to have to deal with injuries with him. It's just like, that just appears who he's going to be at times. But hopefully they're just these minor things that might cost him a half of a game or something along those lines. And look, if you're genuinely worried, I can understand trading. And getting back Kawhi is not a bad return. But I wouldn't be doing it personally. He's still, you know, despite his struggles, despite his injuries, he's still averaging 24 and 10.5 with 2.5 blocks, over a steal on 50 and 76% shooting. So he had that concern earlier in the season with his field goal percentage dipping because he was taking those extra threes. It's now back at 50%. He's added in half a 3-pointer as well, and he's hitting those at 32%. So he's playing, you know, fairly well. He's not quite at the level he was last year, but he's going to get back there. I'm pretty confident, but there is that slight concern regarding his injuries, which I do understand. But I still think that he's a pretty much an untouchable guy to me in most situations. Not that I own him anywhere, but he is an untouchable guy in most places. The waiver wire line of the night goes to Trevor Booker of the Utah Jazz. Derek Favors was a last-minute scratch due to some personal issues, which we don't know what they are. They're personal, obviously. Booker started and played 38 minutes, 13 and 15, 2 steals, 3 blocks. He was really good with the percentages as well. And we saw last year on games when Cantor or Gobert or Favors would miss and Booker would have to start, he was a really good daily fantasy option. He's also the DFS value play of the day. He was a minimum salary 3,500 guy. He put up 43.5 points. So if you were able to get him into your lineup when the news came out, you'd be pretty happy with that result. But his long-term value is pretty... Yes, he's the number one backup big man on this team. It was a little bit strange to me that earlier in the season when Booker was missing games, when Favors was out, they were giving him some minutes to Trey Lyles. But they went with Booker here, which to me is the smarter option. Lyles is not, he's not ready to really contribute. But Booker is only of value in very deep leagues and in daily fantasy in situations like we had today when one of Gobert or Favors has to miss. The young gun of the night, head across to the Los Angeles Lakers, and it's Jordan Clarkson, who played 36 minutes, which is probably one of the more encouraging things about it. 19 points, 2 threes, 3 rebounds, 4 assists, 4 steals. Great percentage as well. He's a really good field goal percentage point guard as well. If you're a team that doesn't want to punt field goal percentage, he's shooting 47% from the field this year. He's still averaging 15 points and 1.5 threes, and he's not a good assist guy this year. He's only at 2.1. That's because D'Angelo Russell's there. So he's playing more as a two guard, but you can obviously slot him in as a shooting guard on those teams. If you're a punt assist, he's a great guy because, you know, high field goals, low assists, but still giving you a steal, still giving you 1.5 threes, still scoring all right and helping out in those percentages. And he is available in some 12-team leagues. He has been dropped in some of those leagues. He's a top 100 player. He's not going to be the guy that he was the second half of last season unless something drastic changes in LA, but he has value aside from that, so don't completely ignore Jordan Clarkson. The dud of the night is Eric Gordon. So back to the Pelicans. Eric Gordon played 32 minutes in this one. He was 1 of 9 from the field for 4 points. That one field goal he made was a 3-pointer. He had 1 assist and 1 steal, so nothing else. Just a real, real stinker of a game from Gordon. He's been fantastic this season, probably better than most people would have anticipated. He's hitting 2.7 threes a game and almost 18 points, 3 assists and over a steal. But today, just one of those games. Now, with Tyreke Evans and Norris Cole looking to return on Tuesday, Gordon is set to take somewhat of a hit. So if he had a big game here, it would have been the perfect time to try and sell high on him. He was a sell high guy before this anyway. You're not going to be able to do it after he put up 4 points, unless the owner that you're trading him to is really like... You're not aware of the situation and news that's happening, which is possible. That might happen. But for now, you just hold on to him and you hope that he can retain top 100 value, which I'm pretty confident he will. I don't think it'll be top 70 value or top 60 value, but I think top 100 value is not a stretch for Eric Gordon for this season, even when those other guys come back. All right, that is it for the daily awards. Let's now move in and have a look at the rest of the action by going through these box scores and breaking it down in a little bit more detail. The first game of the night, who was it? It was the Toronto Raptors and the Washington Wizards. And I turned this game on about 3 minutes in and watched 2 minutes of it, and it was the most ugly 2 minutes I've ever seen. There was just bricks going up everywhere. No one could score. Passes not even touching people's hands as they get thrown out of bounds. It got better after that, and the Wizards will be disappointed that they couldn't get the victory. It was not a high-quality game, but there were still some high-quality fantasy performances. Kyle Lowry was awesome again, 27-7, 6 threes, 2 steals and a block. He is close to a first-round guy this year, just putting up tremendous numbers. Probably the guy we need to talk about the most here, though, is Bismack Biyombo. That's 3 straight starts for him. He's going to be the starter with Valanciunas out. He's played 30 minutes in all of them. He had 35 here. He didn't score. And he only took 1 shot. But that's, you know, sort of to be expected from him. He's not even a zero. He's a negative on offense. He's not even a zero. But he had 16 rebounds. He had a steal and he had 4 blocks, which is something we haven't seen from him so far. In his first couple of games as a starter, he didn't get a block. But this is what he can offer. So you need to be in a situation where you don't need the points. So he's not a direct replacement for Valanciunas, is what I'm going to say. He's going to be big boards, big blocks, bad free throws, whereas Valanciunas is scoring and good percentages. But that's not to say that Biyombo doesn't have a role. He just has to fit certain teams. DeMar DeRozan had 20 points with 3 rebounds and 3 assists. That's an okay line from him. Luis Scola, he struggled in this one after 2 really good games in a row. Still got 26 minutes and went 6-6. Not a great night for Scola owners. He still has that borderline 12-team league value. And Damari Carroll was terrible. 4-4 on 1-of-8 shooting. His shooting is just not... It's just not on board at all this year. It's just not where he was with his time in Atlanta. He's had a lot of poor shooting performances. He's still been good, but he hasn't been Atlanta good. He's shooting at 38%, coming off a 49% season last year, a 47% season the year before, and a 46% season the year before. So, what he needs to do is he needs to get this field goal percentage up. It needs to rise up, and I think there's still a chance that he can do it. So to me, it's a little bit of a buy low situation for Damari Carroll. His scoring is down. And that is to do with the drop in field goal percentage because he's taking more attempts. So if he gets even close to 48, if he's at 45, 46, we will see him as a 15-point scorer, you know, a couple of threes, and everything else is pretty much in line with what we expect. His shooting is just in a real slump, and I imagine it will improve. It might not be the same as Atlanta because we're talking different system, and different teammates and all that different coaching, all that sort of stuff, which puts him in different positions to score. But you don't think that it's going to be 10% worse than what it was last year. I would be shocked if he's a 10% worse shooter. So if you can buy low on Damari Carroll, he's currently ranked outside the top 100. If you can buy low on him, I would be trying to do that because he definitely has that top 60 potential if that shot comes back around. And I've got more confidence that it will come around rather than not. Not much else to talk about from the Raptors, I don't think. Patrick Patterson had a nice game, 7-8 with 2 threes, but we don't really get too excited about him. Corey Joseph played 34 minutes off the bench, 12 points with 6 assists and a couple of threes, so that's a nice night from him, but he had been trending downwards. I don't think that he is worth holding on to in standard leagues. For the Wizards, Brad Beal, 20 points, 6 rebounds, 6 assists, 3 steals and 2 threes. That's a really good night from Beal, really efficient as well. 8 of 8 from the line, which is something he needs to do. He's not someone who's got to the line all that often in his career. So if he can get there more often, it's really going to help what he can do from a scoring perspective. Otto Porter got things back on track. He played 39 minutes and went 13-5 with 3 threes. And Marcin Gortat was 16-10 with a steal and a block. So good nights from those guys. John Wall, though, he continues to struggle. And I know Vivek is just super keen for me to give John Wall the dud of the night. He's very much a John Wall hater. And Wall was, the counting stats look okay, 18-3-5 with 3 steals and a 3. But the percentages are just killing you with Wall. 6 of 25 from the field here. He went 5 of 8 from the free throw line. He only had the 3 turnovers, but geez, he's just putting up some really, really poor numbers. He's a guy that is ranked outside the top 70 at the moment. His shooting's 39% from the field and 73% from the free throw line. So we're talking 5% dips in both of those categories based on last season. You'd have to think that John Wall starts to get it right. You would hope anyway. But he might not be able to turn around. I'm still pretty confident in John Wall being a top 20 player by the end of this season, but the way he started off has not been ideal. His assists are way down as well. But what we do look at, if you're looking for positives, is his three-pointers are up to 1.2. His steals are over 2 as well, and he's blocking 1 shot a game. So there are positives to see from Wall, but there are a few more negatives that are obviously a little bit more troubling with what he's doing. But I'm confident that he can get it turned around. The Wizards made the change and put Jared Dudley in the starting lineup ahead of Chris Humphries. Dudley played 30 minutes, went 7-4, so that's not too exciting, and I don't think he's going to be a real exciting guy for 12-team leagues. Chris Humphries, back to the bench, 14 minutes. There was no value in Chris Humphries for the last 2 weeks anyway. But you now officially see there's nothing to really see. The Wizards were without Gary Neal and Nene in this one, who are both sort of last-minute withdrawals. The next game is the Brooklyn Nets and the Cleveland Cavaliers. The Cavs got out of this one. They were being thoroughly outplayed early on, but they get themselves a victory. Rondae Hollis-Jefferson continues to rack up steals. He had another 5 in this one, along with 10 rebounds, and those numbers alone are enough for him to be owned in standard leagues. The scoring is not ideal. He's only averaging 5.4 points, but if we look over the last 2 weeks when he's been playing 28 minutes a game, he's at 8.5 points, 7.2 rebounds, and 2.5 steals on 51% shooting and 78% from the free throw line. So he's doing enough to be owned in pretty much all standard leagues. Just if you're struggling in the points category, adding him is clearly not going to help. He's going to be a negative in that area, but the steals are awesome. The rebounds are really good for a small forward player. He's shooting at a pretty high percentage, so he's providing a lot of value. Brook Lopez, 22-9 with a couple of blocks. Joe Johnson, 17-3-1, so a nice night from him. And Jarrett Jack went 12-5-14 on some bad shooting, but added 2 threes. And Thad Young continues to have a pretty solid season, 16-12. Not much to really mention from the bench. Nothing really happened with those guys. Kevin Love is on fire again, 26-7 with 6 threes, 2 assists, and a block. His value is set to decrease when Kyrie Irving comes back, but I don't think it's going to decrease that much. We heard all the talk in the preseason. They're going to make Kevin Love a focus. They're going to make Kevin Love a focus, and they're making him a real focus of this team. And Irving, yes, Irving is going to impact that, but you know, shots are going to go away from Mo Williams, who took 13 in this one. Shots are going to go away from J.R. Smith, who took 12. I think that Love is still going to get, you know, a pretty sizable role in this team. So I'm not selling him extremely low. I'm not selling him at last year's value. I'll put it that way. I don't think he's going to be as bad as he was last year when Irving was healthy. LeBron James, 26-9-5. That's a pretty stock standard line from LeBron. Mo Williams, 14 points with 1 assist and 2 steals in his 28 minutes. And J.R. Smith, a really weird stat line from J.R. Smith. Only 6 points, but had 5 rebounds, 3 steals, and 4 blocks. That looks more like a James Johnson line than a J.R. Smith line. He's a must-own 12-team league guy for me. Timofey Mozgov isn't. He played 17 minutes in a start, 2 points, 6 rebounds, 2 steals, and a block, while Tristan Thompson played 32 minutes off the bench and double-doubled for 10 and 11. And Thompson's still getting 30-plus minutes, even though Mozgov's back, and he's a source of rebounds, but really, that's about it for Tristan Thompson. The Denver Nuggets and the Dallas Mavericks. Kenneth Faried was back, but they eased him back into it. They played him off the bench, and there was a late scratch as well here with Gary Harris out with concussion-like symptoms. Randy Foy got the start and was putrid, 5 points in 37 minutes. So Will Barton played 30 minutes off the bench, went 14-8-4 with 4 threes, a steal, and a block. They didn't put Barton into the starting lineup because they like him as that sixth man, so another good night from Barton. Darrell Arthur went 16-5 with 2 steals and 2 blocks, and he's had a couple of big games as a starter. He's had a stinker or two in there as well. But with Faried back, Arthur's going to have to go back to the bench now, you would think. And his usefulness will be gone. Now, Faried played just 14 minutes and went 10-5 with 2 steals and a block. So if you're Faried only, you're happy that he's back. And hopefully you think that he's going to get back to those decent minutes in the next game. Danilo Gallinari, 12-9. That's not much to really talk about. Nikola Jokic played 19 minutes as a start. And Joffrey Lavernier actually got into a game here. He played 8 minutes. So it appears that Jokic is going to be the guy that gets the majority of the minutes at center. And the other thing to note here is that there was no JJ Hickson. He did not play because he's not good. And that's as simple as that. So if you're owning Nikola Jokic in 12-team leagues, it's getting a little shaky, definitely. But the pecking order is Jokic and Lavernier. So, the 18 minutes is not ideal. They did go small a lot in this one, but I'm still holding Jokic for another week or so just to see exactly what plays out with this whole situation. Emmanuel Mudiay's percentages were horrific again, but 12-5-4 with a steal is okay, but your team has to really be able to absorb that because he's got a lot of negatives. He provides some positives, but it's not going to be a situation where you're going to be able to absorb all of those negatives for most teams. So he's not fair. So if he gets dropped, he's not an automatic add. You really need to look at your team. Zaza Pachulia bounced back after a bad game, 16-12 with 3 steals and a block. So that was a good night for him. And Dirk was pretty solid too, 13-7 with 3 steals. And Darren Williams, 22-4-4. So good nights from all those guys. And it stands to reason against a Denver team who is pretty lousy. They had an absolutely horrific third quarter, Denver. They scored just 5 points. It took them 9 minutes to score their first bucket. So they were pretty useless. JaVale McGee still cutting into Dwight Powell's minutes. Now, Powell did play 21 here, but that's down from sort of the 26 he'd been playing because the other 5 went to McGee. So Powell's 12-team value is done to me. JJ Barea didn't play as expected, so Ray Felton got a big bump in the minutes. He took the minutes, not Devin Harris. Felton played 28. 12-3 with 2 steals is not a bad return from Felton. And he's that minimum price DFS guy. And if he's going to get 28 minutes and put up that, you're sort of okay with using him. Chandler Parsons is just really testing our patience. 23 minutes for Parsons, 4 points, 2 assists, a steal and a block. Because it's not that he's playing limited minutes, is he's not being productive in those minutes as well. So that's I'm holding him in league still because he's got legit top 50 potential. But when's it going to happen? That's the concern. Like if this stretches onto the middle of the month, then you have to go, well, if he's still playing 23 minutes, middle of December, if he's still playing 23 minutes, why do I keep holding him? You know, Wes Matthews is similar. 28 minutes for Matthews, 7 points with 4 assists. He just is clearly not the same guy that he was in Portland. And obviously he's coming back off a pretty significant injury, but he's nowhere near that same guy. He's got significant reductions in his scoring, his three-pointers, his rebounding, his assists, his steals. His percentages are down from 45 to 35. So he's a long way off his best. I don't think that he's necessarily a must-own guy. Yes, there's potential for him to get back, but to return from an Achilles injury is not always the surest thing. The Atlanta Hawks and the San Antonio Spurs is up next. A pretty comfortable win for the Spurs. So there was no need for a lot of these guys to play big minutes on both teams. So when we look across the box score, the highest minutes for the Hawks was 26 to Paul Millsap. Everyone had really, really poor games. Interesting thing to note here is that Thabo Sefolosha was back, and he got the start over Kent Bazemore. He played 25 minutes, Bazemore played 20 minutes. Now, was it to do with the fact that they wanted Sefolosha on Kawhi Leonard? I don't know. Maybe. But let's monitor it going forward. Bazemore was still pretty effective, 11-7 with a steal and a block. So if I added Bazemore, I'm still holding. But it makes me a little bit nervous that they played Sefolosha more minutes. But it's hard to judge exactly what happened in this game because it was such a blowout and minutes were spread all over the roster. Same goes for the Spurs, but Kawhi Leonard doesn't really care for low minutes. 22-7, a steal, a block, two assists, three threes. He's been fantastic. And Tim Duncan grabbed 18 boards in his 28 minutes. LaMarcus Aldridge only had to play 25 minutes, but 13-6 with three steals and two blocks. So you're happy after that 18-minute performance he put on Friday. And again, everyone else, there's just not much to really look at. We can look at Danny Green again, and he only had 5 points. He did have a triple one, though, so the steals and blocks were there. Overall, still not a great line from Danny Green. I am still holding him, but I can understand people that are dropping him at the moment because he's not producing enough in those categories that really gave him the value, and that's understandable. I am still personally holding him, though. The next game, the New Orleans Pelicans and the Utah Jazz. We've covered Davis, we've covered Eric Gordon. Alonzo G was okay here, and that's something that doesn't happen very often. 8-2 with a couple of steals. Ryan Anderson struggled. Ish Smith played 37 minutes in this one. Again, just big minutes for Smith. 13-6-6 with two steals. Really interested to see what happens Tuesday when Tyreek and Norris Cole is back. Ish Smith's on a non-guaranteed deal. Tony Douglas is on a non-guaranteed deal. Norris Cole is in the last year of his contract. So you don't think that they're going to keep 4 point guards around. Someone is probably going to go. I would say it's going to be Tony Douglas. And he played 16 minutes here. So I don't think we're going to see minutes from him moving forward. But what happens with Smith? It's very intriguing to me. He's obviously still a guy that we're owning, and I'm not doing a preemptive drop to grab someone because he could still play, you know, pretty decent minutes as like a sixth man on this team and play 30 minutes off the bench and play 26 minutes off the bench. Who knows what they do with this Smith, because yeah, he's going to be a better option than what Alonzo G is. He's going to be a better option than what Dante Cunningham is, even though they do play different positions. That the Pelicans can move guys down. They can play Evans at the three. They can go and move things around to allow Smith to get onto the court. So he's been really good, but there is definitely a drop in production coming. The extent of it, we just don't know. Drew Holiday played, was a back-to-back, so that's encouraging, but he only played 14 minutes, 2-2-2. You just want these minutes restrictions to go. It's super frustrating with Drew Holiday at the moment. He's not someone that I drafted because of this reason, and if you did draft him, I can understand that you want to move on, but it's probably hard to do that at this point. But if you're floundering in the standings, it might be the best move. Omer Asik, how bad is this guy? 8 minutes for him only, 0 points, two rebounds. People used to think that he was a good player, and he was a pretty decent player for a stretch of time, but no, he's just bad now. There's just nothing to be said positive for Omer Asik at this point. On the Jazz, Alec Burks had a pretty decent night, 21 points, 5 rebounds, 4 assists. And Rudy Gobert had a really nice performance too, without Derek Favors. 14 boards for Gobert, just 9 points, but a steal, 4 blocks, you know, a pretty standard Rudy Gobert line. Rodney Hood was also good, 16-2-4 with a couple of threes and a couple of steals. And Gordon Hayward, definitely not reaching the heights of last season for Hayward, but 17 points with a couple of steals and a couple of assists is not horrific. Now, Trey Burke battled through his back issues, but again, we see Raul Neto playing 18 minutes, Trey Burke playing 15, and then the other 15 minutes, they're going without a point guard, and they're running Burks, Hayward, and Hood all together, and it is clearly the Jazz's best lineup. So I'm glad that they're giving those guys, you know, pretty big chunks of minutes out there together, because they are clearly the best lineup for this team. The Lakers and the Portland Trailblazers. Lou Williams was out of this game due to the death of his grandmother or grandfather. I don't remember. I think it was grandfather. And he's going to be out for tomorrow's game as well. So Byron Scott actually did the right thing here and played big minutes to Jordan Clarkson, 36, D'Angelo Russell, 38. Not sure about Kobe getting 34, but yeah, we know that Byron Scott is not going to do anything regarding common sense or coaching with Kobe Bryant. It's just not going to be what he does. But let's focus on the positives here. Clarkson went 19-4-3-4, as I mentioned before. D'Angelo Russell, 16-4-5 with two threes. His minutes are trending up. He's looking a lot better. Scott is still liable to do something stupid at any stage, but Russell has to be owned in all leagues at this point. And Julius Randle went 16-6 with three steals and a block. You're going to get ups and downs with Julius Randle, definitely, and this was clearly one of the ups. Now, Kobe produced 21 points, which is okay in a points league or in a situation where you're not punting or where you're punting field goals, because he went 7 of 20 from the field, 2 rebounds and 2 assists. But there's always, you know, if you're not built for Kobe Bryant, he's not a must-own player anymore. And that's as simple as it gets with him, I think. Roy Hibbert had 6-6 in 30 minutes. Not a great night from Roy. And, of course, Meta World Peace, he needs 20 minutes. 4-5 for him with a couple of steals. Not much else to really talk about on the Lakers. For the Trailblazers, only two guys got into double digits, and that's Damian Lillard with 29 and CJ McCollum with 28. They combined for 9 threes. Lillard had 7 assists, and these are clearly the two best fantasy guys on this team. But the big story here for the Blazers is Myers Leonard returned. He played off the bench. You'd think that he'll take that starting job back off Noah Vonleh pretty quickly. Leonard played 22 minutes, went 7-6 with a 3 and a block. I'd be looking to add him in any league where he's available, and Vonleh will go back to complete obscurity. Now, if you're looking at Mason Plumlee and going, oh, 24 minutes, it's only, yeah, Myers Leonard's back, he needs to be dropped. That's not the case at all. He was limited by fouls. It's going to be Leonard and Plumlee playing the bulk of the minutes in the front court. 6-4-4 for Plumlee. He still obviously needs to be owned. El-Farouq Aminu, not a great night for him. Still had 9 rebounds, but only 5 points. And the guys who are going to cop the hit are going to be Ed Davis, who struggled a little bit here with just 4-4 in his 24 minutes. Alan Crabb down to 17 minutes. Gerald Henderson played 8 minutes. Mo Harkless played 26 minutes. But most of those guys are only deep league players, and they're the ones who are going to cop a hit with Leonard going back up to 30 minutes. And obviously Noah Vonleh. The last game of the night is the Sacramento Kings and the Golden State Warriors. Ben McLemore had probably his best game of the season. 10-3-5 with 3 steals, 2 threes and a block. That's encouraging, but I'm not buying into it just yet. DeMarcus Cousins was out, so Kostas Koufos, of course, put up big numbers. 14-7 with 2 steals and a block. He's must own while Cousins is out. Not that Cousins is out long term, but if you're going to stream someone in, you look at Koufos. Interesting in this one is that George Karl went back to the Darren Collison's playing more minutes than Rajon Rondo situation. Collison played 27 minutes and went 11-4-3 with 3 steals, while Rondo played 25 minutes 7-4-7. Now, some of that was due to foul issues with Rondo. He did have 4 fouls in those 25 minutes, but there is always that slight concern. I'm not panicking with Rondo or anything like that, and I'm still loving the production that he's giving you, but there is always that opportunity that Collison can play more minutes. Omri Caspi got a start in this game, replacing Willie Cauley-Stein, 11-7 with 3 threes. He definitely has 14 team league value, and I do like what he can do either as a starter or off the bench. And Willie Cauley-Stein, he's really tough to own. 3-4 for him. He did have a steal and 2 blocks, but he's going to hurt percentages to a degree. Not massive amounts because he's not taking big volumes, but he's not a guy that I think needs to be owned in 12 team leagues, averaging just 19 minutes this season and barely bothering to trouble the scorers. Steph Curry took just 7 shots and only 1 shot after the first quarter. He still had 19 points with 3 threes, 6 assists and 3 steals, so still one of the better lines of the night from Curry. And Draymond Green got his second consecutive triple-double, 13-11-12 with a steal and 4 blocks. He hurt you a bit with his field goal percentage, but still an awesome game for Green. Now, Harrison Barnes was out with that ankle issue, so Brandon Rush got the start and hit 4 threes for 16 points. He didn't get the bulk of the minutes there. Barbosa played 21, didn't do as much as what we thought he could have done. Now, Andre Iguodala was limited to 22 minutes, but when I say limited, this game was a blowout again, so there's no need for these guys to play big minutes. Klay Thompson only played 26 and went 15 points with 3 threes. Lots of concern with Klay Thompson at the moment. Is he a top 20 player? I'd say probably not, but top 30 guy the rest of the season, I'd say that's where his value lies. So I'd be okay, looking at, if someone's looking to really sell low on Klay Thompson, I think that he can. Something is going to have to change, though, with the Warriors in terms of them winning so easily for him to become more involved. And that might happen, but it doesn't look all that promising. But if you can buy him really low, I would do it. It'd have to be pretty low, though, because again, when I say buy low and a guy's struggling, I'm not giving up a player. If I think that Klay Thompson's going to be a top 30 player, I'm not giving up a top 30 player for him. If I'm buying low, I'm buying him like with a guy outside the top 60. That's what I mean by buying low. I'm not buying at his perceived or at his projected value. Now, he's outside the top 70 for the season. He's really, really struggling. But there's obviously scope for him to improve his game. Festus Ezeli had a double-double off the bench, 18 minutes, 11-11. Not much else from him, and we can't really rely on these Golden State centers to do much for us in most standard leagues. All right, that's it. Let's have a short break, and then we'll be back to talk daily fantasy for Sunday's action. I saw ya. Thanks for watching! back now to look at the daily fantasy stuff for Sunday. And reminder, there are a couple of early games, so they may not be included in all tournaments. So pay attention to that. The first game, one of those early games, is the Milwaukee Bucks and the Charlotte Hornets. Got a couple of big men for the Hornets who are questionable. Frank Kaminsky is dealing with back spasms and Cody Zeller is dealing with a right shoulder bruise. So both of those guys might be out. Even if they do play, I really like Marvin Williams here at 4,900. If they don't play, he is going to get, or he should get, a lot more minutes. He's been relatively solid, putting up 20.8 on average across his last three, 24 across his last five. He has had a 35-point game this season. You'd have to think that he's going to get more minutes and a little bit more usage if Kaminsky and Zeller, who'd been cutting into his playing time, definitely if they're both out. And at 4,900, he becomes a really solid option. I don't hate OJ Mayo. He's been getting minutes increasing. He's been playing 25 minutes a game over the last three. His minimum salary, 3,600, he's almost minimum salary. He's averaging 16 points. He can be a guy that you can fit in if you want to go with some other high-priced players. He's been putting up fairly consistent value. Cody Zeller's also been consistent if he does happen to play at 3,800. He's averaging 17.5. You probably want him to do a little bit more than that, but we know that he can. Not much more, but he can do a little bit more than that. So he's someone that we can look to as well. Nick Batum at 7,000 is also a pretty solid play, I think, at small forward against a team like Milwaukee who is giving up a lot of points to opposition wings. So Jeremy Lamb also comes into play in those calculations at 4,600. He's been putting up 24.8 across his last three games. Kemba Walker at 8,200. He's very, he's good and he's averaging 40 points over his last three, and that doesn't include his big game against the Knicks. But the Bucks, one position they are able to shut down is point guards, so that can have somewhat of an impact on Kemba. Not sure he's the greatest play in this one. Definitely avoiding Michael Carter-Williams, who's been struggling. Al Jefferson, we really don't know what we're going to get with him on most nights. Giannis Antetokounmpo at 7,000. He's been okay, but he hasn't really been worth $7,000. So I don't think that he's someone that we really want to get too much involved with on Sunday's games. The next game is the Minnesota Timberwolves and the Los Angeles Clippers. Ricky Rubio, it looks like he's going to play. He's questionable at the moment, but it looks like he is going to play. Nemanja Bjelica, we don't know about. He's been out for a while with this knee issue. I don't think we need to be too concerned about him playing. It looks like that he won't. We don't have a real concrete timetable on him. Blake Griffin, I think, is in a pretty decent spot here. He's at 9,100. He had a really poor game in the last game. It was poor because he didn't need to play because it was such a blowout, but he's averaging 45 across the last three. I do like him a lot at 9,100 against this Minnesota team. Shabazz Muhammad's been playing a little bit better. He had a nice 14-point game in the last game. So in a tournament, if you're looking for someone to throw out there at minimum salary, he's not a bad option, especially with Kevin Martin really, really struggling. DeAndre Jordan at 7,600, I think, is okay. And Karl Anthony Towns has been burning us. He's only averaging 21 minutes the last three games. He's at 6,700, so his price it's come down a bit, but it hasn't really come down huge amounts. I don't think we can really risk him in cash games. We just don't really know what Sam Mitchell is going to be doing with the rotation, unfortunately. 8,900 for Chris Paul. It's okay. It's not fantastic, but there's a little bit to be seen there. And the other thing is, if you're not confident in Karl Anthony Towns getting minutes, then Gorgui Dieng gets the bump. He's averaging 27 in the last three at 4,200. That's really good. But then he could also go and play 18 minutes instead of the 27 that he's been averaging, and then that reduces pretty much all of his value. If Rubio plays, then it's hard to look at using Zach LaVine. It's also going to be hard to look at using Ricky Rubio in that spot too. And 7,500 for Andrew Wiggins, not bad. He's averaging 35 across the last three. We can have a look at him. I think that he's not a terrible play. He's definitely not screaming out as like a best bet or anything like that. But Andrew Wiggins has some value against the Clippers. The Pistons and the Nets are up next. The Pistons are favored by 4.5. The total is 193.5. So a pretty low total in this one. Injury-wise, not much for us to really be too concerned about, I don't think. Rondae Hollis-Jefferson is a really good value play at 4,100. He's averaging over 30 points across his last three. Just consistently getting minutes and consistently putting up numbers. And his price hasn't really adjusted, so I do like him at that spot. 4,800 for Kentavious Caldwell-Pope. He's only been giving you about 20 points, but the Nets are just horrific at giving shooting guards points. So I think that he is someone at 4,800. I reckon he's a pretty decent value play. Brook Lopez at 8,000 is just really consistent. He's giving you basically 40 points, and you know you're going to get sort of 40 points out of him on most nights. Thad Young, his price has started to come up. When he was down under 6,000, he was super appealing. Now that he's at 6,400, it's not so much, but it's still pretty good, averaging 31.8 across the last three. Andre Drummond has started to come back down. Well, not started. He's been coming back down for a while. I don't want to spend 9,300 on Andre Drummond. Reggie Jackson's minutes have come down as well at 7,500. His price has come down too, but not enough for me to go, he's a great, look, he's an okay option, but he's not an awesome option. Jarrett Jack at 6,400. The Pistons do put some pressure on opposition point guards, so it's not an awesome situation for him either. The next game is the Boston Celtics and the Orlando Magic. The battle of two coaches with confusing rotations. So it's going to be hard with DFS in this game, I think. The Celtics are favored by 1.5. The total is 202. So there's a couple of injuries we need to look at for the Orlando side. CJ Watson's out again. Evan Fournier is dealing with some hip soreness. So if he's out, who knows what happens, because that's clearly Scott Skiles' boyfriend. And on the Celtics, Evan Turner had an issue with a poke in his eye. He will likely be able to play, though. Isaiah Thomas, I still think, is really nice at 7,300. He's been putting up some pretty good numbers, and the Magic do allow a lot of points to opposition point guard, so he's in with a look there. Nick Vucevic at 7,100 is appealing, but which Nick Vucevic do we get? Do we get 32-minute Nick Vucevic? Do we get 21-minute Nick Vucevic? It's very hard to rely upon him in anything other than a tournament. I like Jared Sullinger at 6,100. Aside from those guys, I don't love a lot. You can take a punt on Alfred Payton at 6,700 in a tournament, but again, Scott Skiles, who knows what's going to happen. Channing Frye, probably not. Even though he's starting, he's only putting up 12 points. He had 21 in the last game, which was okay, so maybe I could make a case for him at 3,600. Fournier has dropped off and now dealing with a hip issue. Victor Oladipo has looked good off the bench, but at 7,300, I want his price to come down really before I start to rely too much upon him. And 3,700 for Andrew Nicholson's not a bad bet, because he's been getting 25 minutes across the last three games, and he seems to be Skiles' flavor of the moment. So he's getting a little bit of extra value. Not super reliable, but there's enough there to have some sort of look at it. The Philadelphia 76ers and the Memphis Grizzlies are up next. The Grizzlies are favored by 11.5. The total is 194. So obviously there's a lot of blowout potential here. Zach Randolph. The Grizzlies just don't release any information until basically right on tip, so you're not going to look at Zach Randolph, and it's going to be hard to use guys. Actually, not. You know, I'm okay with using Matt Barnes, even if Randolph plays. At 4,000, Barnes has been putting up relatively consistent numbers, and that's a pretty cheap price, but other guys, it does make it difficult. Now, Marc Gasol is down at 7,600. That is really appealing against the Sixers too. He could put up numbers in a short time frame. Same with Mike Conley at 6,900, but just you got to watch the blowout factor in this game. Isaiah Cannon's been red hot, 4,300 for him. I think he's a pretty good play across the board. We don't know if Nerlens Noel's going to play. He missed the last game with a knee issue. Even when he's played, he hasn't been really good this season, so I think we leave him alone. Robert Covington at 6,300, he's been on fire. It's going to be hard to avoid using Robert Covington, I think. He's been just putting up some super, super numbers. But look, the Grizzlies do shut down teams, and they might be able to put a stop to Covington, but I'd still be okay with using him at 6,300. And Jahlil Okafor at 65, not the greatest spot for him, I don't think, going up against Gasol. And he's been okay lately, but not enough where I think that he's going to be able to overcome whatever sort of pressure that Marc Gasol puts on him. The next game is the Phoenix Suns and the Toronto Raptors. Raptors are favored by 5. The total is 205 in this game. Injury-wise, Tyson Chandler is doubtful to play with a hamstring, so pretty much no chance that he plays, I would say. But the value comes from a lot of the Raptors guys. I like Bismack Biyombo at 3,600. He's put up almost 25.5 points across the last three. That's awesome at 3,600. The minutes are clearly there, and his salary hasn't adjusted yet. Louis Scola at 4,600 had a real stinker in the last game, but he's been pretty rock solid too the last couple of games without Valanciunas. So you can look at him, but he's probably more of a tournament guy, as is Markieff Morris from the Suns, who's been good until the last game. 5,600 for him. It's still not an expensive price, and I still think you can get some value out of him. Kyle Lowry is one of the better high price guys on the board at 8,600. 41 points across his last three, another 40 today. Really, really Yeah, playing really solidly. And TJ Warren's at 4,100. Did you buy what he did in the last game? I don't think he's going to do that again. But he's been getting pretty good minutes, averaging 30 across the last three. At 4,100, it's hard to avoid using him in lineups, I think. Now, Damari Carroll's slumping. I'd be steering clear there. DeMar DeRozan at 7,500 is okay, mainly because there's really no other awesome shooting guard options around. And he is a pretty consistent guy that you can look at. He's going to give you 29 to 30 points, which is okay. It's not too exciting. 8,500 for Eric Bledsoe. Not great for him, I don't think, against a Toronto team who does limit the production of opposition point guards. He's only been giving you 36 across the last three as well. And Brandon Knight at 7,900. Not too bad, but probably a situation where I don't want to use either of these guys. The Houston Rockets and the New York Knicks, Dwight Howard is going to play in this game, even though he's going to play in both games. It is the first game of a back-to-back. He's going to play in both. Clint Capella is going to start again. So 4,600 for Clint Capella. I think that he should be in a lot of lineups. Patrick Beverley at only 3,600. He put up 20 in his first start of the season. That makes him a guy that you need to pay attention to as well. On the Knicks side of things, Kristaps Porzingis at 7,000. Last time we played the Rockets, we know how awesome he was, but he's been good even aside from that. Really put up really solid numbers. And Carmelo Anthony has now dropped to 8,700, and that makes him appealing now to me. He's averaging 36 across the last three, but he's in a situation against the Rockets where teams can put up pretty big fantasy numbers. So Melo is a guy that I think that we can look at using here, especially with that salary dropping right down. James Harden at 10,700. He's putting up almost 59 points across the last three. He's been carrying this team. And yes, it's a lot of money to spend, but you're guaranteeing yourself 50-plus points most nights. And Dwight Howard's still at over 8,000. That's still no chance that I want to use him there. And obviously Terrence Jones at 5,600 is not someone that I'm going to want to invest too much in either, given he is now on the bench and playing only 24 minutes that we saw in the last game. The last game of the evening is the Indiana Pacers at the Los Angeles Lakers, a Roy Hibbert revenge game, also a Jordan Hill revenge game, but Jordan Hill is questionable with a sore lower back. Kobe is also questionable due to it being a back-to-back, and Byron Scott ran him out 34 minutes in today's game, so maybe we don't see Kobe, and that would just mean more of a boost for guys like D'Angelo Russell at 5,100 and Jordan Clarkson at 5,500. Both of those guys a really good value as is, but I think that without Kobe, we're going to be looking at using them in a lot of situations. Julius Randle at 5,700 is a pretty friendly daily fantasy option. And Paul George is the other guy we need to look at here. 9,900, so he's almost at $10,000. He's averaging 45. The Lakers aren't good, so Paul George could put up a pretty big game. So I'm okay using him in this spot. He needs to go pretty big, but we know that he's got the capability of going pretty big. If Kobe's out, Nick Young's a minimum salary player that we can have a look at. Hasn't been great recently, but he does have the ability to go up and put up 20 points. And at minimum salary, you have to be pretty happy with that. And if you believe in revenge games, Roy Hibbert at 5,200 has been in a bit of a slump, but he can put up some okay numbers, get himself a few blocks, and maybe he is worth taking a look at. All right, guys, we are done for today's podcast. Don't forget, follow me on Twitter at redrock_bball. There's basketballmonster.com, hardwoodparoxysm.com. Make sure you're checking out everything over there. Leave a review on iTunes and subscribe on YouTube. That's it. We're done. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya.